this is Monocle Reads. I'm Georgina Godwin. On the show today, my guest is Martin Bailey, a noted Van Gogh specialist who co-curated Tate Britain's 2019 exhibition, Van Gogh and Britain. He writes a weekly blog on The Artist for the Art newspaper, and along with the trilogy on Van Gogh, his other books include The Sunflowers Are Mine, the story of Van Gogh's masterpiece, Vincent Van Gogh, The Homes and Landscapes That Shaped the Artist, and The Illustrated Provence Letters of Van Gogh. In his latest work, Van Gogh's Finale, Over and the Artist's Rise to Fame, Bailey provides a comprehensive analysis of the suicide of the artist. He also looks at his work in Over and what made him into the man that we'd recognise today. Martin, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Why did this suicide need to be re-examined? Have there been other recent alternative theories?
Well, it was always assumed and thought that Vincent committed suicide until 10 years ago, when a biography was published with a very detailed account of Van Gogh's life. And at the end of the book, there was an appendix which dealt with his death. And that was what really grabbed attention. It was by Nafer and Smith, two American biographers. And what they propounded was the idea that Vincent did not commit suicide, but that he was killed or murdered by a young local teenager. And that theory has really taken off. And when I go around talking and giving talks on Van Gogh, the most common question now really is, was he murdered? Until 10 years ago, the question I always used to get asked was, why did he cut off his ear? So anyway, this theory has now gained a lot of traction. And for my latest book, Van Gogh's Finale, I really set out to forensically examine the evidence. And I'm convinced that it was suicide. That may sound like the old theory, but it's true. And I think the idea that he was murdered is just adding yet another myth to the myths that already surround Vincent.
Now, one of the new pieces of evidence that's come to light since that book, which was giving this alternative theory of murder, is that the weapon has been found.
Yes, astonishingly, in 2019, I got contacted by an auctioneer in Paris who is selling what appeared to be Van Gogh's gun, the one that he'd shot himself. It was discovered in a field. And the Van Gogh Museum, which is the ultimate authority, has deemed that it is probably the gun that Van Gogh used. We can't be absolutely certain, but it's highly likely. And for my book, I tracked down much more information about where the gun was found and who found it. And it was discovered in about 1960 by a local peasant on the outskirts of Auvers-sur-Oise, on what had been the edge of a wheat field. And he was quite a respectable farmer, so there's little reason to question the story. He made no money out of the discovery, and indeed he didn't publicise it, so he didn't get any rise to fame himself. And it was found when he was ploughing just beneath the surface of the earth. Now, the reason why I think this is significant is that if someone else had shot Van Gogh, they surely would have wanted to get rid of the gun properly, and they wouldn't just have casually left it in a field or just a few inches below the ground in a field. They would have thrown it in the river or thrown it in some very deep undergrowth or buried it deeply. So I believe that it probably was the gun. And the fact that it was found near the surface of the earth sort of suggests that it could well have been the scenario of suicide, that Vincent shot himself. Obviously, he would have dropped the gun and it would have lain there and he wouldn't have picked it up. So that accounts for why it's just beneath the surface. So I believe the discovery of the gun really strengthens the traditional theory that it was suicide.
And what of the person that people speculate may have murdered him? Who was that?
It was a local teenager. He was 17. And they speculate that, the authors of the biography speculate that they were basically mucking around and shot him by mistake. There's also a theory that he was actually murdered. But it seems very, very unlikely when I went through the evidence. And the person who was supposed to have shot Vincent, in the interview that he gave, in which he said that his gun had been used but that he had not been involved, he said that he was not present in Auvers at the end of July when Van Gogh shot himself. So either this witness couldn't remember or he was deliberately telling a lie, in which case his evidence is very little use.
So can you tell us more about the people surrounding Vincent at the time of his death?
Yes, I mean, what I think is highly significant is that they all thought it was suicide. Now, they include Dr. Gachet, who was the doctor who treated Vincent, and I found Dr. Gachet's diary entry for July 1890, which hasn't been published in an English publication. And on the date of the shooting, he wrote suicide. That was Dr. Gachet's word. He thought it was suicide. He talked to Vincent for the last 2 days before Vincent died. He treated Vincent. He saw Vincent's body. The innkeeper where Vincent was living believed it was suicide. The local policeman came round to investigate. He concluded it was suicide. The mayor of Auvers, who signed the death certificate, believed it was suicide. And the local Catholic priest, who refused to allow Vincent to have a service in the church, believed it was suicide. And Emile Bernard, who was Van Gogh's closest friend, an artist who was working in Paris, believed it was suicide. I tracked down 6 newspaper reports. Some of them have not been published in the Van Gogh literature. They described it as suicide in 1890. But most important of all was Theo, who was Vincent's brother, and they were very close to each other. And when Theo heard that there'd been some accident, he rushed to Auvers from Paris and stayed there at Vincent's bedside until he died 2 days later. And Theo believed it was suicide because that's what Vincent told him. So I find that very, very conclusive evidence.
Absolutely. Theo would certainly have kicked up a stink if he'd thought otherwise,
wouldn't
he?
Well, indeed. I mean, anyone would. And also remember that suicide at that time in Catholic France was frowned upon and it looked very bad for the family. So there was not a particular reason to say it was suicide if it wasn't. And if Theo, who loved Vincent, had any inkling that he'd been murdered or been shot by accident, he would have immediately consulted Dr. Gachet and the mayor and the authorities and taken it up. But that didn't happen.
Now, there was obviously some evidence that Vincent had suicidal ideations much longer before that.
Yes, indeed. I mean, only a year before he died, he was in the asylum in the south of France in Provence. And there was an incident in July 1889, exactly a year before the suicide, when Vincent was out painting just outside the walls of the asylum, and he swallowed paint. And that made him very ill. And he had a psychological attack, which lasted about a month. And afterwards, he described it as a failed suicide attempt. And there were several other incidents when he came close to suicide. And indeed, mutilating your ear and cutting off the blood supply, cutting through the blood supply, could have killed him. So in a sense, it was mutilation, but it could have been a failed suicide attempt as well.
Can we just stay on the ear for a moment? As you say, it's one of the questions you'll most usually ask.
Yes.
Why did he do it?
He was living with Gauguin. Gauguin had come and worked with him in the south of France, in Arles. There were tensions between them. So he was very nervous. Vincent was very nervous. Vincent was worried that Gauguin was going to flee back to Paris. I mean, the reason I think he did it, although this isn't accepted by all scholars, is that he felt threatened by the fact that Theo was going to get married. And if he got married, he would have children and he would have less attention that he could give to his brother. And importantly, less money, because Vincent depended on his brother Theo for money to live on, and that was what made it possible to be an artist. And I believe that Vincent received a letter from Theo announcing his engagement on the very morning of the day that he mutilated his ear. But he was a highly strong person and very vulnerable to moods, and Vincent obviously also suffered from some psychological illness. And one moment, this is how it came out, in a very destructive urge to mutilate himself. I mean, we don't know to what extent it was a cry for help or what it was exactly. And Vincent tried to put it out of his mind. and never really spoke about it.
Mm. And what of the day in which he did shoot himself? Was there something that happened?
We don't know. There is no evidence. We know what his last painting was. He was working on a very striking landscape a few hundred metres from the inn where he was staying, of tree roots, which may sound an unusual subject. And it was quite a sort of abstract work, and the trees' trunks and roots are almost dancing across the canvas. It's a very striking canvas. And we know he was working on it on the last day. What actually pushed him over the edge, we don't know. Rather than an external event, it may just be that his mental illness just suddenly struck him. And he appears to have left the inn late in the afternoon, about 6 o'clock-ish, and walked to the wheat fields and then shot himself.
Was there any history of mental illness in his family?
Yes, indeed. And I think that's very telling. Of his 5 siblings, 2 of them suffered serious problems. His younger brother, Cor, committed suicide. That was in South Africa in 1900 when Cor was fighting in the Boer War. We don't know what happened, but we know that he took his own life, and that's recorded in Red Cross records. Another sister suffered very severe mental problems, his sister Wilhelmine, and a year after his brother Cor had committed suicide, she had some very serious mental illness and had to be sent to a mental asylum. And astonishingly, she lived in this asylum for 38 more years until she finally died of old age. And the medical records there say that she had, and letters say that she had suicidal tendencies. And for most of her life after she was in this asylum, she never spoke, but occasionally she spoke. And when she did, she often spoke of suicide. So there was obviously some very serious mental problem in the family. Mm. And before you ask, we still don't know exactly what it was. So many medical specialists have tried to examine this question, and there's been no agreement.
You did a huge amount of original research, and in a moment I want to go on to the other 2 parts of the book. But just on this bit, what was the, because you yielded a lot of fresh material, what was the most surprising thing for you?
Well, I guess holding the gun was the most emotional thing, and it was more emotional than I was expecting. I went over just before the auctioneers were going to put it on the market, and it was brought out from a back room in a white box with tissue paper, and there was the gun. And it was very rusty. The wood on the handle had rotted away, and I put it in my hand. The auctioneer allowed me to do so, and then I took a photograph of it on the, with my hand, actually on the doormat, curiously enough, because that was the only space in the room. And it was so small, the gun. I mean, it was no longer than my hand. It was a tiny instrument, and yet a tiny instrument can still kill someone.
And it killed him, really, when he was doing some amazing work. And that is, in fact, one of the parts of the book. You look at what he was doing in Auvers.
Yes, I mean, it was the most productive period of his entire life. He was there for 70 days, just over 2 months, and he painted 70 paintings, very close to 70. So he was doing one a day. And they include some of his finest works. One thinks of his portrait of Dr. Gachet, which sold some years ago and then disappeared, sold for a record price. And one also thinks of the wheat field with crows, which at one time was thought to be his last painting. And that's a very strong work that probably so many of your listeners will be able to envisage, with the crows flying with a dramatic sky over the wheat field. So, yes, he did some of his finest pictures there, and particularly landscapes. I mean, he was there during spring. It was a nice time of the year to work outside, and he was inspired. He'd been in Provence for 2 years with a very different landscape where it's parched and, in a sense, it's more dramatic. but the rather sort of more gentle landscape of Auvergne, not unlike the landscape in England, was fresh for him, and that really inspired him.
Mm. And I mean, this book is packed full of illustrations that haven't necessarily been seen before.
Yes, I mean, I enjoy doing research, but only if one can come up with fresh material and fresh images so that you don't feel you're getting just another Van Gogh book. So I went out of the way to try and reproduce images which haven't been seen before. And hopefully that will make readers enjoy it just as much as I enjoyed writing it.
Mm. Well, it very much comes across, doesn't it, that how much you enjoy it. But I wonder what the spark for you of this is, because this is your fourth complete work on the artist. You write a regular blog about him, a weekly blog about him. How much more can there be to say?
Well, I'm asked that question very often. and I manage to write a weekly blog on Van Gogh every Friday. And I try and put in at least one thing that even the specialists won't know. And that's what I enjoy, is trying to find new facts. And it may sound curious considering how much has been written about Van Gogh, but if you want to dig and you know where to dig and you've got a good background and good contacts, there is always more material to write about, even for what is possibly the most famous artist in the world that's ever lived, or at least one of the handful.
Mm. Well, of course, he wasn't famous in his lifetime, and that's something else that you go into in the book, that transition from the suicidal unknown, really, to the great figure we see him as today.
Yes, I mean, he sold one painting, or he definitely sold one painting of his 1,000 during his lifetime. He was beginning to get a bit of... people were beginning to know his name in the last year or two of his life, but he was relatively unknown. And it's astonishing that someone who was unknown in their lifetime became famous, and fairly quickly. I mean, the first 10 years, it was slow, but by 1900, he began to be well-known among art lovers. Then there was the first post-impressionist exhibition in London in 1910, and he was one of the stars of that. And his fame has just gone up and up and up and up, and the prices of his work have also done the same. And what is the reason? Well, partly the art is so instantly appealing to us now. The strong colours, the pictures somehow look naive, but they also have a strong appeal. And the more you look at them, the more they have to say. I mean, sunflowers is such a well-known image that we think we know it, but if you actually stop and look at it, ideally in front of the real thing, there's more and more to discover. And the other reason why he's become so popular is his life story. I mean, he led such an astonishing life that it's obviously intrigued us. You know, he started off fairly conventionally. He then became an art dealer working in Paris, London and The Hague. That didn't work. He studied Latin and Greek, didn't do very well at that. He then decided to become a missionary and worked with the coal miners in the Borinage of Belgium. But he was no good as a missionary because he couldn't really communicate with people.
And he wanted to convert them to Christianity.
Indeed, indeed. He was a militant Christian at that time. And his father actually was a vicar.
Of what particular?
From the Dutch Reformed Church. And he didn't succeed at that. So he said, well, I'll take up my pencil. And that's exactly what he did. He started off drawing and he then turned to paint. And it was really moving to Paris that he discovered the Impressionists and the use of colour. And, of course, that's his forte. And then he went to Provence, where he was all by himself without other artists around him, where he developed his own personal style. And it was then a career which was cut short too briefly.
Do you think that if it hadn't been cut short, he would still have attained that level of fame? Or would the fact that there were more paintings coming out all the time have made him not quite such a rarity?
I think he would have become more famous. And I say that because I think he would have influenced the next generation. He already influenced the German Expressionists and several other art movements, such as the Fauvists, the Wild Beasts. And he was influencing them when he was dead. If he was still producing work, he would have influenced them even more. I mean, just think of some of the artists who've lived to a great age, and Picasso in particular. You know, how Picasso's style kept changing and developing and moving forward because he was such an unusual and creative artist. And some people believe that Picasso was producing his greatest work in his very last years, in his 80s.
I wonder about the writing. Obviously, you've got a great story to tell. As you say, this is a fantastically interesting man. And you are also able to print images. But you write about what those images look like. And that's a completely different kind of writing. How do you describe a painting?
First of all, ideally, you want to reproduce it. And in the case of Vincent wrote about or referred to many of his paintings in his letters to Theo. So I'm very lucky writing about an artist who wrote so well and whose letters have been preserved. So it's very interesting to have Vincent's take on what he thought was important when he was describing a painting to his brother. In the case of landscapes, where we know where they're of, obviously I would try and mention, you know, this is the church in Auvers, and this is a photograph of what the church looks like, and this is how Vincent has interpreted it. In some cases, one can write about the colours or the style that it's done. I try not to write too much because I really like the art to speak for itself. But I think readers like to get a few sentences about each of the pictures, and particularly the ones that are illustrated.
Mm. And what was it for you that first fascinated you about him? Why has he become your lifelong subject?
Well, that's easy to answer because it was a long time ago, but someone mentioned that Vincent had worked in Brixton in South London. And I said, I didn't know that. That sounds very interesting. And I didn't know it at the time. And I then thought, well, it would make an interesting article. And I was working for The Observer then, and I was going to do an article for The Observer Sunday magazine. And I went over to Amsterdam to the Van Gogh Museum and found that there was a cache of hundreds of unpublished Van Gogh family letters. Now, these weren't letters by Vincent. They were letters between other members of his family, but some of them had references to Vincent. And they were in Dutch. So I found a friend in Amsterdam who helped me go through the letters. And there were lots of fascinating nuggets about what Vincent was up to in London. And I thought, this is too good just for an article. I'll do a book on it. So that's how it started. And I never expected to continue. But I've found Vincent so fascinating, I haven't been able to drop him.
What was he doing in London?
He was working for an art dealer in Covent Garden. And he failed dismally at his task, because apparently he was no good at dealing with customers, and in the end he was sacked. But it is interesting that he was here in England, and he learnt English, he read English literature, he loved Dickens, George Eliot and Shakespeare, and he imbibed English culture. And he also discovered, and this was very important, he discovered English artists, and particularly illustrators who worked for the Illustrated London News and The Graphic. And that was to have quite an influence on him when he set out to become an artist. And finally, I should mention he was 20. And it is the age when all of us are highly influenced by what happens. We tend to remember what we were doing and who we knew and where we were when we were in our early 20s. And later on in life, everything begins to blur. So it's a very crucial period. Well, for me, and I think for all of us, probably.
Mm. This book comes out towards the end of September. Will there be another?
I haven't got any plans. I think I need a bit of a break.
Martin, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us. The book is Van Gogh's Finale, Auvers and the Artist's Rise to Fame. It's by Martin Bailey and it's published by Francis Lincoln. You've been listening to Monocle Reads. Thanks to the producer, Nora Hull, and engineer, Chris Oblakwa. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.